This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Rushmore Conti Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mighty Year 1090, ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Thursday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
Doing good, Arash. Just getting through this heat in Southern California and looking forward to the summer. It's officially summer now, so now we have to actually look forward to it.
That's right. We're going to have Fredo Cervantes on in the next segment. He was in Rancho Cucamonga for Clayton Kershaw's first rehab start. Looked good. Before we get into the Dodgers game last night, why don't we get your thoughts on that? I mean, just the fact that Kershaw is back on the mound, looked good with the Quakes. How big of a – and again, we don't know exactly what Kershaw's role will be, but how big is it to get Kershaw back?
It's huge, especially when, you know, like we've mentioned many times before, that Yamamoto is out for a lengthy period of time. You need as much pitching depth as possible. Now, I don't know when Kershaw is going to be reinserted into the rotation. I don't know what role he will have, because at this point, we don't know if he's going to be long relief. We don't know if he's going to be an opener, a piggyback with Ryan Yarbrough, which I think would be the best case scenario. But what we saw in his first rehab start was good stuff. He threw, I think, 55 pitches, something around there. He had 5 Ks. He looked like the Clayton Kershaw that we all love and know. And his breaking ball was getting over the plate. His fastball is around 90 miles an hour, which is a good sign. His velocity is still there. Usually when you come off of a shoulder injury like that, your velocity is going to be down. It looks like he's ahead of schedule already, and that's a really good sign for the Dodgers. Honestly, this whole time, Arash, I've been thinking about this, and you know, a lot of the times Clayton Kershaw has had, especially in the recent years, he's had a really, really good first half of the year where he looks like the Cy Young Kershaw that we were getting 10 years ago. And then in the second half, he kind of tails off. He gets a little bit of fatigue. He gets injuries, whatever it may be. I think that this break for him, and I know that he's rehabbing an injury, so it's not the same, but I think having less innings on his arm right now is so beneficial for the Dodgers. A lot of people are like, oh man, imagine if he started at the beginning of the year, how good we would have been. I am looking at it in the fact like, hey, he's going to be pitching kind of like that 60 game season in 2020, where he was great in the playoffs because he didn't have a lot of miles on that arm. Yeah. And I think this could be a good thing for him. And I think, honestly, this rehab stint should be a little bit longer. I don't think that it should be something where it's, hey, one or two starts like we usually see out of a rehab assignment, and then he's back in the major leagues. I think that this should take a little bit longer, let him lengthen out, let him get that fatigue back on his arm to see how it responds, and then go from there. But honestly, I think this is very beneficial, and to see him getting back to it a little bit ahead of schedule, because I always thought that he would be back maybe mid-August, maybe late August for September run. He is now in the middle part of June and looking like he's ready to return. So I think it's a good sign, but I also do think that they should be a little bit more cautious just because of what we've seen with Yamamoto and what we've seen with Bobby Miller with the shoulder. So it's just a really good sign to see Kershaw just back on the mound in any type of Dodger uniform, whether it be minor leagues or major leagues.
It was a great point about 2020. I mean, that was my thought as well when we went into the postseason following a 60-game season. I said, well, like what we're going to get in the postseason for the first time is first half Kershaw, and we really did. Again, the Dodgers go on to win the World Series in 2020. So the Dodgers lose last night against the Colorado Rockies 7-6 following three straight wins. Again, you know, still have a 9-game lead in the division. Your thoughts on the game last night, and kind of like big picture, where you see the Dodgers as we head into July?
Yeah, the main takeaway from last night was, I think, Bobby Miller. He made his return from a pretty long hiatus on the injured list with that shoulder inflammation. And he did not look like the Bobby Miller that we saw in the beginning parts of the season. And even, you know, I mentioned this in my piece that I did, is that even in his rehab assignments, he didn't really look as good as I expected him to. His ERA was inflated. He didn't really get a lot of outs. So that's a little bit of a concern. But obviously, I'm going to throw a little bit of it out just because it's Coors Field. And, you know, a lot of pitchers' numbers are inflated at Coors Field. Obviously, like, you'd love to see Bobby Miller have a great outing. And, you know, besides the first inning home run where it was a three-run homer and he was already in a deficit, he did okay up until the sixth inning. And I was actually surprised that Dave Roberts sent him out for that last inning, especially coming off of such a lengthy injury. But he did. And look, I'm not going to judge him based off of this first start. I'm really not, just because, like I mentioned, it's in a very hitter-friendly ballpark. It's his first start coming back. The jitters, you got to get the jitters out. There is jitters coming back from a two-month hiatus, but basically. So I'm going to throw that out. I'm curious to see how he responds in his next outing, whenever that may be. They may give him more rest, I think. But that was one of my biggest takeaways. The other takeaway was that the offense has really looked pretty good as of late. And like I mentioned, they are playing in Colorado, and that's a big part of it. But Shohei Ohtani filling in for Mookie Betts in that leadoff spot, he has been really, really good ever since then. And not just him, Teoscar Hernandez, he left the game, but Dave Roberts and Teoscar seemed like they weren't too concerned about it. They were just trying to get him off his feet. But him and Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman have really been picking up the slack since Mookie Betts has been out in the series. And that's a really good sign for the Dodgers. They need that type of production. Andy Páez is swinging it as well, a rookie swinging it the way he is. He's looking more and more confident as the games go on. So the offense it's funny because over the past month, Arash, you and I have talked about it, where the offense was struggling and the pitching was kind of taking the lead. And now it's kind of flipped. The pitching has fallen off a little bit because we saw Buehler give up 4 or 5 runs. And then we saw Bobby Miller give up 5 runs. But other than that, the offense has kind of taken the lead here. And it's kind of a flip of what we've seen with their struggles in the past month. Is it concerning that they're losing to the Rockies and like putting up a fight with the Rockies? Not really. I mean, like Mookie Betts mentioned before the year, every one of these teams is going to make this kind of like their World Series. And a lot of the teams that are not playing for contention, they're going to try to beat you and they're going to try to throw everything at you to try to win. So I'm not really concerned about that. Now they're going to head back home after this last game in Colorado and play the Angels in a freeway series. And I don't know why the freeway series is always 2 games, Arash. Like, yeah, let's make this should have been the 4-game series, but yeah. No concerns really. Even if they lose this series, I'm not really worried. Like you mentioned, they have a 9-game lead. And this is why I mentioned that they can kind of coast from here on out and still be okay just because of how bad the National League has been.
I wanted to get your thoughts on Paul George. You definitely have a, you know, the pulse of the Clippers fans out there. And obviously the season that he had, certainly the postseason that he had, rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way. The Clippers have made it very clear that they're not going to give him a max contract. Now, you know, Brian Windhorst and whatnot, they are beginning to kind of talk about it. And it's very clear that while the Clippers would like Paul George back, it's not a priority. Paul George had some comments that, again, rubbed Clippers fans the wrong way during his podcast in terms of chasing a championship. Describe where Clippers fans are with Paul George, I guess.
So after the season, you know, obviously there's a lot of hate and there's a lot of recency bias just because of how he performed in the playoffs and how the season ended. Like, this is supposed to be a championship season. This is supposed to be one of their best seasons of all time. And the way it ended, it rubbed fans, you know, the wrong way, pretty much. And, you know, Paul George has his podcast, and it's a very successful podcast. And he went on there and he made some comments that Clippers fans really were soured on. And he said that basically, like, hey, I don't care about a championship as much anymore. I just care about the play style and how they play and how I play and what the team plays like. He gave credit to the Orlando Magic. He kind of bashed the roster construction. He kind of mentioned that, hey, I wasn't really on board with giving away Nico Batum and Robert Covington. He mentioned a lot of things that were like, hey, dude, like, you were a big part of why we exited in the first round. And that is how Clipper fans are feeling right now. And that's, you know, kind of exactly how I think this era has gone, right? Because you can really say, like, this guy led them to the 2021 Western Conference Finals. Yeah. Like, he really did. And you got to give him a lot of credit for that. But there's also a lot of times where Paul George has gotten in the way of himself and he's really said the wrong things at the wrong time. I mean, back when he signed his contract extension in 2020, Arash, he said, I want to bring a championship here. Like, that's my main goal. That's why I signed an extension. I want to win a championship. And now all of those comments are just flipped. Now it's all about, like, oh, well, you know, this guy did this wrong and we didn't play together as a team. And, you know, look how good Orlando is. And, you know, our roster wasn't as good. And honestly, around the time that they got James Harden, Arash, we all know this, he said, oh, I was all on board with it. I was ready. Yeah, this trade was, you know, we were all on board with the James Harden trade. And now in the summer, he's saying, well, we shouldn't have traded away some of the core pieces. So it's just a flip-flop of comments by him, and that's rubbing Clipper fans the wrong way, and rightfully so. This is a guy that is paid max money. He was paid a lot of money to come in here and bring a championship to the Clippers, and all of his comments now in the summer have basically been like, I don't really care that much about winning, and he's never said directly that he cares about the money, but he has said it indirectly that he's like, hey, if I have an opportunity somewhere else, I'm going to go look at it. So Clipper fans have really, really soured. I mean, I talk to a lot of Clipper fans, and the main consensus here, Arash, is that they don't care if he leaves. They don't care if he seeks another deal. They want youth. They want athleticism. And honestly, at the main point, they want guys that care about winning a title, because that's the main thing still with this organization, is that they want to win a title. Clipper fans are eager for that ring. And when you hear comments like that, like, he may not mean it, but just don't say it, you know, and that's the thing. When you put stuff out there, it just rubs an organization and a fan base that is hungry as ever for a championship. And I think that's where we're at right now. I mean, if they give him less than a max, that would probably be ideal. But at this point, I think he's going to go seek the max on the free market.
Yeah, because we've talked about how, you know, it really wouldn't make sense to just run this back. But we've also said how that, you know, may be their best pathway to having a contending team. But again, you know, when you've gone 4 straight years with Kawhi not being healthy, I mean, the hope is, I mean, listen, one of these years he's going to be healthy and we're going to go into the playoffs with Kawhi and Paul George and maybe James Harden. At this point in time, Grant, I mean, from what I'm sensing here, is that Clippers fans don't want to run it back with this group, and certainly not with Paul George. And so, you know, I saw it on social, and you talked about it, but it just, I guess, I'm more surprised. But at this point, would you agree that Clippers fans do not want Paul George to come back?
I think that's fair to say. I've been talking to a lot of fans that have been fans for a decade. I've been talking to fans that have been fans just since they got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, and they're all out on him. They're out. They're out on this era. They want, like, I'm in a group chat with a lot of Clipper fans that go to the games, their season ticket holders, and what it may be. And they're like, hey, if we can, they're just looking at trades right now. They're looking at free agents that they can sign in place of Paul George. Like, what if they get DeMar DeRozan? What if they go get Kelly Oubre? At this point, Clipper fans have just, I think they're out, not just on Paul George, but just this era in general. And I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because if you're trying to contend for a championship, then, you know, I don't think that Paul George leaving really helps that case. And I know that it would probably be better, because you don't have to deal with his inefficiencies and the things that he says, and, you know, a lot of the negatives that come with Paul George. But the fact of the matter is that he's a 20 plus point per game scorer, and that's hard to replace in the NBA. That's hard to really, he was an all-star this past year. Like, we got to call a spade a spade. He was an all-star this year, and he was the previous years as well. So, you know, I know that a lot of Clipper fans are really tired of this. They're really tired of the injuries. They're tired of the underperformance. But honestly, there are really not that many options out there to replace him. So if you can get him back under the max and he says, look, I want to stay in my hometown, I think that's the best case scenario, because you still keep a competitive team. Like, would you rather be an 8 seed and in the play-in, but have a scrappy young team and without Paul George? Or would you rather be in the contender status and a top 4 seed with Paul George and just maybe bank on them being healthy one year? I think I would take the latter of that. And as much as I've been negative about this era and about all the injuries, I think going into a new arena, that's the philosophy in the front office, and that's honestly the philosophy for getting them back to a title. We just saw a wing duo win the championship, and I know that they're much younger, but we've seen that it can work. A two-wing duo that leads a team to the playoffs, and those guys stayed healthy. Maybe the Clippers are just going to bank on those two guys staying healthy like they have been the past 5 years and say, hey, maybe this new arena gives us some juju.
When I think of fun times or teams that Clipper fans loved, it really was that Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Pat Bev team that, again, lost in the first round, but they were a scrappy team. And but to your point, you're moving into a brand new $2 billion arena. You want to have it packed, and it will be, but you want to have these stars. And again, they brought in Kawhi and Paul George, partly to open up the Intuit Dome, but again, to win a championship. And again, they got to the conference finals in 2021. But again, to your point, that was Paul George. I mean, Kawhi goes down in round two, and Paul George really, led that team to the conference finals. You brought up a couple of names. Okay, I mean, let's play this out. If Paul George does leave and there's no sign and trade, in terms of cap room and in terms of flexibility, what could they potentially do there?
So if Paul George leaves, they can't like replace his max slot. No. So they're going to have to, they do have the full MLE available, which means you can sign a player much like the Lakers did with Gabe Vincent last year, like around that range. So I would be looking at a wing to replace him, whether that be, like I mentioned, Kelly Oubre. If the Bulls want to get rid of DeMar DeRozan, I am almost sure that DeMar DeRozan would come and play for the Clippers. I know they tried to a few years ago and it just never panned out. But they need to get another wing to kind of sustain that spot. It was really hard on Kawhi Leonard, and I'm not sure why, if this is why his knee was so inflamed in the late part of the year, but it was a big issue to have Kawhi play the four. And if they can get a four, a power forward to kind of play alongside Kawhi Leonard, if Paul George does leave, that would be insanely ideal. If you can get a guy like maybe John Collins from the Utah Jazz, you can swing a trade there. There's a good amount of options that aren't star players, but but there are players that are, say, look, Nico Batum is another guy. If he wants to come back to LA, he's a free agent. I know he mentioned retiring, but if you can go get Nico Batum again, I know he loves it in LA, and I know his wife loves it in LA. She mentions it all the time. That would be a great get on a veteran minimum. So there are options if he leaves. But again, you can't replace him with a max player. You can't go get like a guy like OG Anunoby, because that money's just not there. So while it does help them a little bit, you know, with the full MLE, it's still not the caliber of player that Paul George will be, which is why I think that running it back is probably what the front office is thinking right now.
Last question for you. The two other stars who are on this team, James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Again, we know Kawhi will be back. Again, hopefully he's healthy enough to not only begin the season, but you know, we'd really love to see Kawhi on Team USA in the Olympics this summer. Real quick before we close out the segment, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, what does the future look like for those two players?
Yeah, from everyone that I've talked to, it just seems like James Harden is going to be back. At what number, we don't know. Maybe it's a 3 for 75, a 3 for 90. I think it'll line up with Kawhi's years. It just won't be as big of a and as lucrative as a contract. I think he'll get 30, 35 million a year. And honestly, he deserves that. He was at the forefront of that team. He was the point guard. He was probably the best player in the playoffs for the Clippers. And that's something that he had a lot of criticism for, and he actually performed pretty well in that first round. So I think they'll give him a 3-year deal to line up with Kawhi's. Russell Westbrook has that player option. I think he will opt in. He loves it here in LA. Him and James Harden were just at Kendrick Lamar's pop-out concert with LeBron and all those guys. So I think he loves it here on the West Coast. If he wants to go to Phoenix, I think that's a good fit for him. But he has the option to do so. And I think the Clippers love his energy. They love what he brings. And his teammates love him as well. So I think that's the best option for him. Just lastly, I want to give a shout-out to Kendrick Lamar. That was an amazing show. That was one of the best shows I've ever seen. Probably one of the greatest nights in hip-hop history. And there were a ton of athletes there, a ton of celebrities there. So shout out Kendrick Lamar for the West Coast, man.
Amazing. That moment, and obviously his song, which is, you know, that is playing on, you know, Power 106 and all of the airways in Los Angeles. But yeah, but what a very cool moment. Happy to see Russ happy again. And I think when what he went through with bouncing from team to team, what happened with the Lakers, I think you're right. I think... and listen, if Paul George leaves and they come back with Kawhi, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, they bring in some other pieces. Listen, I mean, this team needs to be changed somewhat. And I think that might be the best thing for Paul George. And it might be, in the long run, the best thing for the Clippers. Grant, you're the best. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, we'll be joined by Fredo Cervantes, who was out in Rancho Cucamonga for Clayton Kershaw's rehab starts. We'll talk to him about that when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 of Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Welcome back to the Rushmore Connelly Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or a comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, now let's welcome in from the Sporting Tribune, Fredo Cervantes. Fredo, how are you?
I'm doing amazing, sir. How are you today?
I am good, my friend. You were out in Rancho Cucamonga covering Clayton Kershaw's first rehab start. You did a great job. A story is on the front page of the Sporting Tribune. Kershaw shows promise in first rehab start since his shoulder surgery. You were out there, Fredo. How did Clayton Kershaw look?
I mean, first of all, it's a great sign for the Dodgers to kind of see Kershaw coming around in this type of, you know, in the moment like this, losing Mookie Betts just over the weekend, which was just a big blow for the team. But seeing the way Kershaw looked last night in Rancho in his first outing. He's expected to have about 2 to 3 more starts, he mentioned last night. He said, you know, he would like to kind of get a few more starts before he heads out to the big club. But he said, hey, if needed, he will come out sooner depending on the team's needs. But last night, he looked terrific out there. Pitched 3 innings, gave up only 2 hits, which those 2 hits, he actually could have pitched a perfect 3 innings because those 2 hits kind of got by the third baseman there, which could have been stopped. But at the same time, he did look very good with his off-speed pitch. That was one of the, I mean, we've seen his 12-6 curveball that he's been throwing for almost 15, 16 years, and it looked the same last night. Yes, he was facing single-A hitters, but that filthy curveball was going at 71, 72. And the highest he threw last night, which was, you know, typical for a guy his age right now, throwing 90 miles per hour and, you know, trying to get that, you know, and for major leaguers right now, that's kind of like batting practice right there. So now it's going to have to be, we might have to see Clayton Kershaw kind of evolve like maybe like Greg Maddux did back in the days. You know, when Greg Maddux kind of lost a little bit of his speed, but his movement of the ball was just amazing. And, you know, we did get a chance to see Maddux, 2 years here in Los Angeles, like in 2006, I believe it was. And, you know, that's going to have to be the transformation that Kershaw's going to have to be coming around right now late in his career.
What's sort of the timeline again, you know, with the struggles that the Dodgers have had, and we'll talk about that, but no Yoshinobu Yamamoto for at least 2 months. It could be longer. We'll see. Walker Buehler has not been effective back on the IL. What's the timeline for Kershaw, you think?
You know, honestly, I think he will be returning sometime in early July. I think it's going to most likely be right after, you know, the 4th of July weekend series there. Which they will be hosting here at Dodger Stadium. So you can kind of expect that unless, you know, of course, we just saw Walker Buehler go down, so we didn't really see that coming in the last, you know, 36 hours or so. Yeah. But as well, Bobby Miller returning last night for the Dodgers, that was another key pickup as well. But maybe this is a time around where the Dodgers might need to make some extra moves come the trade deadline.
What is a Quakes game like? That is something that I have not done yet that I've always wanted to do. What was the atmosphere like, and what is it like to go out there?
I mean, there were fans lined up 2.5 hours prior to first pitch. And it's like, you know, you go out to Rancho Cucamonga. It's a very nice location, nice area in the Inland Empire, about, you know, two hours east of, you know, downtown. But the fans were out there. I mean, there were so many Kershaw fans. And I think that's where really brought out the fans. Yes, it was a sold out crowd. 4,200, I believe it was, which is not that large, but stadium's very small. But every seat was filled out there. And, you know, even though Kershaw only pitched 3 innings, the fans stood throughout the night. You know, they were enjoying some great deals there. Because honestly, Arash, I know I see you tweet this a lot all the time in regards the concession stands and locations. And yet, yesterday's deal that I was walking by, and I was like, wow, do you get a hot dog, a bag of chips, and a drink for like $8, which is kind of impressive, you know, in a ballpark. You know, you never really get something like that unless you go to the Angels game and you get a family pack of 4 dogs, 4 drinks, and 4 tickets for like $38, you know. That's something else you guys can go ahead and get out there. But yeah, no, it was a great crowd out there yesterday, especially on the Wednesday night as well, school night.
I love it. You did a great job covering the Dodgers when they got some bad news. And so I kind of wanted to ask you about each one. Let's start with Yamamoto again. You know, I was having a great start to his first season in Los Angeles. And I guess the concern here, I talked to Dr. David Chow about that. And Dr. Chow basically said, I don't know if he's for sure going to come back this year. Now, according to Dave Roberts, he's not out for the season. But again, it's hard to have a timeline with what he's going through. Describe how big of a loss this is with the season that he was having here.
I mean, it's a huge loss because you first look at the contract he was given early in the year, and, you know, seeing the way his momentum was coming along, he was pitching very good, especially that outing in New York as well. But, you know, dealing with that injury, it's a huge blow. But at the same time, you know, Yamamoto, they said, you know, as Roberts also stated, you know, maybe early mid August might be a projected day. They really don't know how his injury is going to, you know, change in the next, you know, week or so, because that's very important how he's going to be able to try to heal properly and make sure he, you know, doesn't do anything to harm his injury right now, because that rotator cuff can be an issue. And, you know, a lot of pitchers deal with that same type of injury, and you know, it keeps them out for about 2 to 3 months. So that's why they're probably thinking that, okay, he might not come back this season, depending if they don't want to, you know, push him up and risk a further injury, which can really, you know, affect that contract he was given. So the Dodgers are going to have to be very, very careful. But even with the new GM, with Gomes, and, you know, he even talked a little bit the other day. He's like, look, you know, we will look out in the trade market. We're never going to stay steady in where we're at. We're always trying to improve and get better. So hopefully the arms by Bobby Miller last night as well, and Clayton Kershaw coming in, that can really give it, you know, a little bit of more push for this team moving forward.
Exactly. And to your point, you know, when you sign someone to a 12-year contract, you're thinking long term. And again, yes, they would love to have him back, but you're not going to put him in a position to hurt himself or where he could get hurt long term. So we'll see about that. Again, not out for the season yet, but a lot more question mark. What's not a question mark with Mookie Betts is he has a broken hand. Timetable for that is 2 months. Not ideal, but again, when you look at the calendar and it's June, again, he should be back, you know, clearly before the end of the season. You were at the game, you were in the clubhouse, you talked to him. What is the feeling like with Mookie Betts? Again, not ideal, but the one example that I can give Dodger fans out there is that Corey Seager broke his hand around the same time, came back before the end of the season, went on a tear, and again, won the World Series. So again, I think Betts is hoping for the same thing. What was Mookie Betts' thoughts? And again, tough loss for the team.
You know, he was very, very disappointed that day. You know, he honestly, he mentioned that I've never been hit in the hand like that before. So he was unaware of the injury. He was like, I felt it go a little numb. I wasn't sure what was the issue, but then afterwards, he's just like, yeah, I couldn't move it. Just, you know, got evaluated, and, you know, they saw what happened there with the fracture. And it's a huge blow for the team, because he was arguably right at the top of the, you know, MVP talk right now, you know, just doing everything, especially playing shortstop. I mean, that's still kind of, yeah. I'm still trying to get used to that. Like, our shortstop is Mookie Betts right now, like, yeah. You know, trying to get comfortable with that. But, you know, it's going to be a huge blow. But the answer, honestly, is Shohei Ohtani in that case, yeah. Because that now that gives him the opportunity to be the offensive leader, be the leadoff hitter now, as he was with the Angels throughout his time there. So he's very comfortable in this situation. But, you know, the production will still be there. You still have Andy Pajes going out there. He was pushed to that role yesterday, and, you know, being the fourth hitter, you know, and now you're kind of getting Freddie to come back. But one missing piece, Arash, there's one missing piece to this whole situation, especially to the offense, is going to be Max Muncy.
Yeah.
I mean, once the Dodgers get Max Muncy to return, that will clear things up in the infield a little more. And his bat is just, it's a great lefty bat to have in the middle of the lineup as well.
Your thoughts on the way that the team has looked? Again, they lost last night, breaking a 30-game win streak. But again, you know, they have a 9-game lead in the division. They've looked good. You know, this is sort of the time of year during the summer where they go on a huge run. But that being said, you know, the last couple of years where they've won 100, you know, plus games, but they've lost in the division series. So, you know, again, most of Dodger fans are really not concerned about the regular season. Again, they want them to win the division and have a good season. But again, your thoughts on the way the team is playing so far?
I mean, right now in the middle of the season, they're 46-30. I didn't really think they would be at 30 losses at this point in the season, because you kind of expected this team to win way over 100 games, maybe possibly beat some sort of, you know, his franchise record. But, you know, the team has dealt with certain injuries throughout the year, and not being fully healthy has still held this team back. But it's always leaving runners in scoring position. I mean, honestly, I don't know how many runners they leave hanging all the time. Last night's game was just two mistakes in the seventh inning that kind of lost in that game. They were up 6-4 at one point after Bobby Miller left the game, and there was a missed catch by Pajes at center field. There was a missed opportunity by Biggio at third base, and those two errors allowed the runners to come in, tie up the ball game, and then the rest is history there. But one surprising key player as well has been Gavin Stone, starting pitcher. Yeah. Gavin Stone, you know, a young guy, 25-year-old, and you know, he's 7-2 this season with a 3 ERA. That's what you can ask from a 25-year-old right now, especially being in the type of team like this. But you know, it's gonna be, you know, a rough July for the Dodgers. I can see that automatically, which is maybe a reason why it's gonna push the front office to make some sort of trade late in that month. And then, you know, once mid-August, and I know once we kick off in September, that month of September, rosters get expanded, and definitely you're gonna see the Dodgers really get warmed up, get going into October.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, the Dodgers definitely are in the market for making a trade. And again, we certainly thought that they would make a couple of deals prior to losing Betts and Yamamoto. And with those two guys out for at least 2 months, there's no doubt that they're going to look to make a trade or two. Switching gears, and then some more bad news. Cam Brink out for the season, torn Achilles. The other terrible thing is, again, she's going to be out for the Olympics. She was on the three team there. Just touch on how big of a loss she is in terms of, she was up for Rookie of the Year, having an amazing first year here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about this, you know, little injuries going around town in Los Angeles. I mean, I think the Clippers got to make sure they lock up Kawhi and Paul George right now, make sure nothing happens to them. But, yeah, you know, honestly, you know, it's a big, another big blow for this team, especially while they've been struggling a little bit early in the season right now, only being 4-11 early in the season. But it's, you know, when you look at Cameron Brink, she was the defensive anchor down below. She was blocking, deflecting shots, and she was making a huge difference, which it was a big difference when they were playing Asia Wilson a few weeks ago here at Crypto.com Arena. And, you know, missing her presence down below, it's really going to affect the way the season's going to end. But at the same time, any given day now that they mentioned within the next few days or games, Azra Stevens, the other center for the Sparks, who has not played this season as well, she is expected to return. So maybe that role, she's going to easily fill in Cameron Brink's role. And, you know, De'Erica Hamby continues doing her thing. She's averaging a double-double right now, 17 and 11 per game. And, you know, again, congratulations to De'Erica Hamby getting a contract extension last week as well, after her terrific play this season and being, you know, that vocal leader that, you know, the Sparks have been needing since Neko Gumeke left.
Rekia Jackson has really played extremely well. You know, she was coming off the bench to begin the season. Now, obviously, such a key player. I mean, not enough is being talked about her. How has she developed and played?
I mean, when she was given the opportunity to fill in when Leija Clarendon went out with the head concussion, she never looked back and gave her starting spot again, even though Leija came back into the starting lineup. But then Lexi Brown was put on the bench. She was dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury. But when Rekia Jackson took that stage and, you know, she took that role of being a starter, she's been playing like, you know, a veteran that's been in the league for about 5-6 years now. You know, there's been games scoring a career high 19 points and 14 points, 16 points, 10 points in yesterday's game. And her efficiency and the way she drives to the basket is like, it's a very powerful move, which it's at times you can't stop that in the WNBA. When certain players have that skill set, it's just kind of very hard to stop. And that's something that Rekia now can take that, you know, rookie role and possibly, you know, take the Rookie of the Year this season. She's, you know, she's in the discussion right now.
And we'll see where the Sparks are in terms of, the draft pick that they have next year. Again, Juju Watkins is not going to be in the draft next year, but Paige Buchers will be. Again, that's going to be a fun little rivalry to watch after UConn and USC played in the tournament a year ago. You covered USC, and again, this is a big season for them. Juju Watkins is a celebrity. Again, you've seen her, again, throwing out the first pitch at Dodger Stadium coming up. Talk about how big of a star she is becoming.
Honestly, I mean, she is a huge star already. I mean, you see superstars. I mean, normally you see stars going to men's games, but the women's games, you normally never saw that till recently. Mm. And I mean, you see her affection with the fans as well. Every time I saw this multiple times during her games this past season as a freshman, where she's leaving the Galen Center and you got hundreds and hundreds of little girls waiting for her just to say hi to her, take a picture with her. Everywhere she goes, she's Juju Watkins. Everyone knows, even I believe, I can't recall which WNBA player said it. I saw it somewhere on Twitter. Someone said, you know, the problem is going to be Juju Watkins in a few years in the W. Like, there were people in the W already noticing that she's going to be a problem once she gets into the league. And, you know, it's going to be pretty amazing for the team that's in that position to draft her number one overall. So it's going to be exciting to see who that will be.
You did a great job covering Bronny James at USC. Again, he was another one where, like, not, you know, he didn't, you know, start a lot of times, but, you know, I mean, he would attract the crowds, and like LeBron would obviously go there. He's worked out for obviously the Lakers and the Suns. Your thoughts on Bronny James? Again, there's a lot of question marks of if he will be drafted in the first round. If he does, will he go to Los Angeles? If another team drafts him, is that basically because they want to get LeBron? Your thoughts on Bronny James as we head into the draft?
You know, this is a pretty interesting topic that's coming around right now as we head into the drafts. But honestly, being around Bronny James from day one since he, you know, started the season with USC and seeing the way he was being treated by his teammates very fairly. He had a great relationship with every teammate. I saw his relationship with Isaiah Collier was just like they were best friends on the court and off the court every single time. And one thing that I just don't understand certain people, like there's a lot of people out there always saying, well, look, Bronny, how can someone like him go into the NBA averaging 3 points per game, 4 points per game, or whatever his average was, which was something like that. But the minutes that he got, the time that he was on the court, there was never any plays run for him. Mm. Every possession, it was either Collier, Boogie, Kobe Johnson, and, you know, DJ Rodman at times. You had those four guys taking all the shots. There was games where Bronny only took two shots a game at times, and he really never got the opportunity. And when he did take those shots, they were maybe late at the shot clock where you just got to throw it up and hope it goes in at that point. But he never really got a true opportunity to play efficiently with this team. And especially, you know, going through that cardiac arrest in the month of July, taking 4 months off, kind of ramping himself up in a matter of like a month, and then stepping onto the court immediately. You're not going to be the same player you were prior to your injury. So it's going to take a little bit of time for people to understand that Bronny can actually play basketball. Mm-hmm. He can defend at a high level. He can shoot at a high level. I mean, I saw him at times, you know, through shoot arounds, practice, when he just spent time in the gym and shooting the ball. I mean, the ball was just like magnetic to the actual net. It kept going in. And there was a few shots too of him at the NBA combine, you know, not missing, shooting consecutive shots and just, you know, hitting the net. And he will get the opportunity, whichever team it is, whether it seems right now it's only two teams, the Lakers or the Suns, either of those two teams, whichever team gives him the opportunity, I'm sure he'll surprise a few people where some people might take back everything they said about Bronny James.
Fredo, it's such a great point, because I think, you know, if you're just focusing on the stats when you're talking about him, like, you're really not doing him, like, any favors. He played well. He's a good teammate. He's a good defender. He's a good role player. I don't think anyone who's talked about Bronny thinks it's the second coming of LeBron James. But in terms of like his teammates, his coaches, they all sing his praises. So, you know, the question, I guess, is where will he get drafted? I think it would help if he was a second round pick. I think if he's a first round pick, there's going to be a lot of, you know, questions about, you know, how did he get drafted in the first round? But I really hope people allow him to develop. Again, from everyone that I've talked to, he is a he's going to be a very good player. And so, you know, we know that he's LeBron's son, and there's a lot that comes with that, but he will be a very good player. Fredo, you're the best. We will have you back on next week. That is all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.